This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, happy Valentine's Day, and welcome to another edition of Making Mount Rushmore Wrestling Edition. Love is in the air for this Valentine's Day, and I thought to myself, what better way to bring Mount Rushmore in Valentine's Day than this special edition of Making Mount Rushmore with best couples and best betrayals in pro wrestling. I'm your host, James Gruenberg, and with me tonight is Mr. Ryan Everett. Ryan, how are you doing tonight?
Good. It's very nice. Cupid is in the air shooting the arrows.
Yes, indeed. And he's also breaking hearts, too. Also with me tonight is Rob Kindler. Rob, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm all fat and ugly, but other than that, I'm all right. I'm just thankful for my wife isn't into Valentine's Day.
Also, not with us tonight, but he did send in a list, is John Keselika. So we're going to start off with best couples in pro wrestling here tonight. Ryan, why don't you give one off of your list?
Okay, I'll go with one that is kind of an out there one, not one that would probably make a lot of lists. But it's not really a romance, more of a bromance, and Booker T and Goldust. And this one, I kind of thought, like, it's a good example of them having friends that are just friends that end up teaming up. It's not like they came in as a team, like, you know, the Dudleys or Legion of Doom, but they came together kind of through wacky backstage segments and ended up being friends and a team, and they never actually have, like, a breakup angle. It's kind of like, I think it's one of the many times Goldust gets fired is why the team really ends, but it kind of ends on their own terms, I think, which was kind of nice and different.
Yes, indeed. It was very different, you know. I think they won the tag team titles, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Armageddon 2002.
Yeah, a very strange duo, but it was always funny, like, when, you know, Booker T would always try and get away from Goldust, but then he embraced Goldust. My favorite part about the whole thing was during the Katie Vick angle, and Booker T goes having sex with a dead body. Who does that? And Goldust, like, raises his hand, and he's like, what? I was young and stupid. Rob, it did not make your list, but do you have anything that you want to add to Goldust and Booker T?
One of the things I really enjoyed about it was when they would do, like, these previews. Like, I remember the Scorpion King in particular, where they would kind of reenact it. And I liked how it showed a whole nother side of Booker T and how he can be comical and have fun with it instead of being such a serious guy like he was in Harlem Heat and like he was with the invasion angle.
Yeah, that there is a funny side to Booker T. So, Rob, why don't you give us one off of your list now?
I'm going to have to go with Adrian Street and Miss Linda. I mean, they were together since, like, the 1960s, and she was his manager, you know, through various promotions. Wherever one went, you got the other. It was kind of a package deal. And not only that, they ended up being together so long, they actually ended up getting married to each other here back in 2005, I believe it is.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with that couple in general. So, what promotion are they from, Rob?
They were all over. They were, like, all over all the different territories, I think.
Yeah, they started off in the United Kingdom. wrestling in Germany, Canada, Mexico. They made their North American debut with Ron Fuller and CCW in Alabama. The only thing they didn't work for was like WWE, WCW. They did a couple AWA stunts. In fact, Adrian Street even went so far as to create Mick Foley's Dude Love costume.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I guess, you know, that. I wonder if they are still together. I'm not sure. But, you know, if they are, you know, yeah, I guess wrestling relationships do work.
Well, he had his last match in 2014 in June, and they're still married, and they moved recently, a couple years ago, moved back to Wales.
Oh, okay then. Ryan, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to add to Adrian Street and Miss Linda?
Not really. I got kind of not too familiar with them. I know a couple of years ago on the network, they had a documentary about them that was pretty good. And I want to say at the same time, they put like a couple of different matches of his that they had on like a Hidden Gems feature. And that was, it was interesting. It was different, but no, I could definitely see that act working. It was kind of like a precursor to Gold Dust, like the original 1996 Gold Dust. And sometimes, you know, that was very ahead of its time gimmick, I think.
Yes, indeed. I'm gonna read one off of John Keselika's list. He has the Sherry and Savage, the other side of the Savage and Lidge coin. And he says that, you know, Sherry and Brandy Savage were meant to be together with their madness. And, you know, that Sherry might have taken bigger bumps than Savage did together the whole time. So that's why he liked Sherry and Savage, because of their madness together. Rob, do you have anything to add to Sherry and Randy Savage?
That's actually on my list of betrayals, so I'll cover everything then.
Oh, okay. Alrighty. Ryan, do you have anything about Macho Man and Sherry?
They were just great together. Sherry, it was kind of different because she'd come in and been a wrestler for like the first year and a half, I think, in the WWF. She was a women's champ and stuff. And then right after WrestleMania 5, she just turns into like this evil witch with Savage, and it worked great. I mean, it's weird to say that. I mean, Randy Savage obviously could have gone on by himself, but adding Sherry just kept him, I think it helped keep him hot and helped him do, like, you know, they had another loop to do after WrestleMania 5 with Hogan, and I think she helped add a lot more fire to him and helped kept him as hot as he was as a heel.
Yeah, I'll never forget, though. I mean, they were still together when, you know, Savage beat up the Ultimate Warrior and cost him the WWF title to Sergeant Slaughter, leading to their match at WrestleMania 7.
With Sherry's...
Yeah, go ahead, Ron.
No, it was Ryan.
Yeah, Ryan, what were you going to say?
Sorry, I was just going to say with the implied fellatio by Sherry to the Warrior at the Rumble 91, where she was trying to get him the title shot and it didn't quite work out.
Yeah. Rob, give us another one on your list.
I would go with Tommy Dreamer and Beulah. I love the whole story about this, with him and Raven in the summer camp, and how Beulah wanted to get with Tommy Dreamer, but he was too good for her, and she ended up being with Raven. And then she turns her back on Raven, sides with Tommy Dreamer, because now she's no longer the, you know, frumpy little teenage girl. She's now a beautiful penthouse model. So now he has the time of day for her. And then you throw in the whole thing where the whole angle where she was cheating on him with Kamana Wanalea. And he announces he's hardcore and he'll take both of them. And, you know, she took a break off after the Dudley Boys gave her the 3D and broke her neck, but then came over to ECW, whatever you want to call it, for that one night only second one, where Dreamer, Funk, Beulah had an amazing match with Edge, Mick Foley, and Lita.
Yeah, I remember that match, and I thought that was insane. And one thing I know about Tommy Dreamer and Beulah is that they have two girls, and both girls got to play the role of Janice Soprano's baby on The Sopranos when she's married to Bobby Bacala.
Now, that I did not know.
I don't know if you guys knew that, but I listened to Tommy say that his kids, his baby girls got to play Janice Soprano's daughter on the show.
Yeah, I was not aware of that.
Oh, yeah. Ryan, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to add to Tommy and Hura?
No, just they were a great, yeah, like, it's ECW's strong point, like the stories that they came up with and stuff, and he given this whole backstory that, you know, she was this fat girl in summer camp and now she's, you know, a penthouse pet or whatever. It was quite the winding story that they came up with there.
Yeah, indeed. They might be the king and queen of extreme, you know, even though the queen of extreme was Francine. Ryan, give us another one off of your list.
All right. So another one I had was Maryse and the Miz. I think just kind of another one of those. I mean, now they've been even on air. I think they've been around for like 5 or 6 years now. I mean, with Maryse obviously taking time off here and there for, you know, them actually having children and having to do that, take care of that, but it's just kind of a nice true life story that, like, they're able to also weave onto television. And it's funny, like, in real life, it's kind of like, you know, the Miz was this goofy reality star and ended up marrying this bombshell, but then on TV it's like, oh no, screw this guy. He's an asshole. He doesn't deserve a woman this good. And then she's also got like the bitchy character to her. So it really works well as a heel combo, I think. And it really added some new life. It breathed new life, I think, into the Miz in like 2016 when she came back. He was kind of floating aimlessly for a while there.
Yeah, I've really found it shocking that The Miz got, you know, this hot, attractive woman like Maryse. You know, he comes from the real world, and, you know, I thought he was goofy too, like, coming in. I liked him in that Tough Enough series, though. You know, I thought he was actually going to beat Daniel Pewter, and, you know, but Daniel Pewter won, but then, you know, The Miz gets, like, all the fame and glory, you know, when it didn't seem like the cards were in his favor, but, you know, The Miz and Mrs., they made out, all right? Rob, it did not make your list, but do you have anything that you want to add to The Miz and Maryse?
Miz and Mrs., it's, again, like you said, interesting, the fact that he starts off as a reality star, and now he's the executive producer, they both are, of their own TV show. And, again, I like what they're doing with them and Edge and Beth Phoenix. basically just not saying that neither one were afraid to get into the ring, even though they're, I dare say, you know, obviously Beth Phoenix outmanned, for lack of a better word, Maryse, and I would think Miz would be bigger than Edge, so I guess they kind of cancel each other out. But yeah, I liked what they were doing there and how they took it in a big story, and that was a great storytelling match at Royal Rumble. But yeah, that'd be about it.
Yeah, I thought it was a great match at the Royal Rumble as well. I'm going to read another one off of John Keselika's list. He has Bam Bam and Luna. He said that he's not sure why these two were put together, but it worked. He said that Luna's craziness would be drawn to a man with flames tattooed on his head. And, you know, he said that Bam Bam was trying to get the term main squeeze over for Luna, and that they are both appear as playable characters in the video game WWF Raw for Genesis. So I liked the Bam Bam Bigelow and the Luna couple tag team, you know, like I thought they looked good, and I thought that, you know, it brought, like, you know, toughness to WWF with those two. Ryan, do you have anything to add about Bam Bam and Luna?
Not too much. Just, yeah, it worked really well. Her just, like, always streaking and kind of sulking around ringside whenever he had a match. So they definitely fit well together, and I think it was a good group. Unfortunately, most of the time they were together, I think Bam Bam was sidled with Doink and Dink, which did not result in many Matt classics.
Yeah, no, it didn't, except I believe, what was it, I think it was like either Survivor Series 93 or like 94 when Doink was getting into the head of Bam Bam Bigelow. Rob, do you have anything to add to for Bam Bam and Luna?
Sorry about that. You know, I do try and forget that Survivor Series 93 match where they had the Men on the Mission and the Bushwhackers dressed up like Doink, because the whole thing with Matt Bourne, and they didn't have someone else to play him right away. But I don't really remember much about it. I think I was about 13 years old when Bam Bam and Luna were together. I didn't necessarily have cable, so I just kind of caught what I could from friends. But I remember I used to get a kick out of it when he would call her Tick, as in lunatic. Uh-huh. But the one thing that stands out most to me is that WrestleMania 10 mixed tag match. And then when she betrayed him by selling him to the Million Dollar Man.
Wow, I did not know that actually happened. That's how Bam Bam became associated with Ted DiBiase. So, Rob, give us another one on your list.
All right. I would have to go with Hunter and China myself. I really like the fact, like, they worked well together. They had that couple's relationship in the real life. You know, he actually brought her in with him. Well, not with him, but to be with him, because she was going to go to WCW. But they're like, just give us a minute. Let me see what we can do to get you in on this. And I love the fact that she wasn't afraid to get down and get dirty with people. You know, I mean, when she snuck up on Marlena and, you know, shook her like a rag doll. And the only bad thing about that, again, is, you know, what he did to her. But we'll get into that one later.
Okay. Ryan, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to add about Triple H and China?
Not much more than what Rob just said. I think it was huge for him, helped elevate him. You know, they tried basically ever since, you know, the punishment, so-called, for the curtain call, you know, they tried to put him with, you know, the different models every week, and then Mr. Perfect, but then he left, and they tried Mr. Hughes, and that didn't work at all, and then finally it was putting him with China that kind of helped make him stand out and become like kind of an upper mid carder through 97 until he was able to take off later.
Yeah. You know, and she's like really one of the only like women I know that got into the face of Bret Hart, well, along with Triple H. So, you know, China played a big role in the Generation X with Triple H. You know, they turned their back on Triple H and on D-Generation X, and they joined the corporation. You know, the fallout. So I guess that's really like the bad part because of how it ended and how he, Triple H, cheated on Stephanie. I mean, on China with Stephanie, and China being let go. So it was a happy, sad relationship towards the end, wasn't it? Ryan, give us another one off of your list.
Well, I'll stay with the theme and go with Triple H and Stephanie. And I think kind of like, you know, in storyline terms, you know, the Stephanie, the China relationship kind of pushed him forward. The Stephanie angle with the wedding and stuff kind of cemented him as a main eventer, like for good. And it kind of propelled him even higher than that. And then, of course, you know, from there came real life. And, well, up until about 6 months ago or so, it seemed like they were poised to be the next head of the WWF. Now I'm not sure what's exactly happening backstage with all that McMahon family drama. But at the very least, you know, Triple H, it set him up for life, I would say, financially at the very least.
The McMahon Helmsley era. And, you know, that, like, I mean, at first we thought it was just, you know, all part of the storyline, but then they really liked each other. And then that turned into real life. But, like, I mean, they really took, like, you know, besides, like, the Macho Man and Liz, you know, they really put their real-life feelings into the WWF and into, like, this acting role. You know, it's like, oh, is it – are you guys really going out, or is it just all, you know, story and you're not really dating? It's like, well, we kind of are really dating. Rob, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to add to Triple H and Stephanie?
You know, I remember when they first, for their lack of a better term, got together, when she was supposed to marry Test, and he's like, yeah, bad news, you're already married. And I remember her just breaking down and crying, and Vince fighting for her honor, for her to turn her back on her dad and be like, yeah, I'm going to stay with him. He may have basically drugged me and married me, but I'm going to stick with him. But again, I don't like the fact, maybe it's just me, but I don't like the fact that he didn't seem to, at least my understanding, is he didn't seem to have enough respect to tell China that this is the direction I'm going. He just kind of happened, and she happened to find out. But one thing I do think is kind of interesting is, I don't know if you guys ever listen to Bruce Pritchard's podcast, but when he talks about their actual real life wedding, they rented out this an entire resort, and anybody who was a guest at the resort had to have a coin. And if you didn't have the coin, you were escorted out immediately, and you had to have that coin available at any time.
Yeah, I heard that story, and I could, like, I you could only imagine being on that guest list and getting that access coin, because I heard the stories that, like, this resort place was, like, really, really nice. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm going to read one off of Rob's list. He has Jake and Damien And, you know, he says that, you know, nothing is close than, you know, a pet. And he thinks that, you know, Jake and Damien had like the best relationship, you know, Damien doing all of Jake's dirty work for him by biting everybody. I mean, you know, you could only imagine what, I don't know how you guys felt about it, but like the spookiness of, you know, Damien taking a bite out of the Macho Man. Ryan, what do you think of Jake and Damien?
I think, yeah, if you're going to look at a different pet combination, you know, they had quite a few pets in the late 80s, but Damien definitely had more staying power than Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's Komodo Dragon or even Matilda and Winston for the Bulldog. So, yeah, I think that's a good pick, and it kind of made Jake go crazy when he lost Damien, so it works pretty well.
Oh, yeah, he said, John also said that it was terrible when Earthquake sat on the Python. So, you know, rest in peace, Damien. You lived a good life, and you did Jake's dirty work.
At least he did make, we did get Earthquake making Quake Burgers on primetime after that, which was quite a treat.
Yeah. Rob, do you have anything to add to Jake and Damien?
You know, my first clear memory of watching wrestling was SummerSlam 1990, where Jake and Damien took on Bad News Brown and his 200 pounds of Harlem sewer rats. And I remember them, like, showing backstage with, like, Damien, you know, cooling off in the shower and Jake cutting an interview, and it looked like Damien was, like, trying to wrap himself around his neck and wrap around his face, and Jake kept grabbing him and throwing him off. And one of the things I think is interesting is the stories I've heard is that Jake was actually afraid of snakes, but he had to do it for the gimmick. And also, apparently people would try to piss off the snake by like flicking lit cigarettes into the bag. That way it would bite him when he pulled them out.
I cannot imagine what it must be like to have cigarettes flicked at you and wanting to bite your owner. All right, Rob, close us out with your last one here.
My last one is Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth. I mean, what can be said that hasn't already? I remember Macho Man came to the WWF at the time, back in the mid-80s, and everybody was trying to get on to be his manager. Everyone was trying to ride his coattails. But then he just announced, no, I got a new one. I'm bringing in her. And they brought her in, and, you know, she was the, for lack of a better word, elegant and classiness that WWE needed. And then I remember SummerSlam 88 with the Mega Powers versus the Mega Bucks, when she got up onto the apron and stripped off that skirt and distracted Andre and Ted DiBiase. You know, granted, it was just a bikini bottom, but that was hardcore for back then. And then, I mean, you could say she was the one ultimately responsible, well, started the Mega Powers breaking up when she got injured and Hogan had to stick his nose in and try to save her. And Macho Man obviously didn't like that. And then she came back at WrestleMania 7. And I'll touch more on that. And I remember when they got married, he got down on his knees and asked her, and she said, "Oh, yeah." And I remember reading the WWE magazine years later, well, about a year later, and they confirmed that they were divorced. And I was thinking, already? Because, you know, at the time I was 11 years old. I didn't know they were married for years. I thought they had just gotten married. And then later on, find out he's the one kind of responsible for her getting into WCW. Basically, hey, you know, what about Elizabeth? So even though they were broke up and divorced, you know, there was no ill will, no angry feelings, just friendly.
Yes, indeed. Yes, all friendly, and you know, they were good friends until the end. Basically, you know, I don't really know what happened with the whole Lex Luger thing, but you know, they were a match made in heaven in the WWE ring. Ryan, it made your list. So, what do you have to say about the Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking wrestling couples, this is the couple. I mean, anyone over a certain age, if you said name a wrestling couple, this would probably be the one they come up with. And yeah, it's really like his whole career in the WWF, at least, just revolved around Elizabeth for the most part. I mean, it was either him bringing her in as his manager, and then like feuding with George Steele over her. Eventually, everything with the Mega Powers was, you know, essentially because of their relationship that, you know, first she's able to get Hulk Hogan to help him, and then eventually that jealousy of him takes over. I would say the jealousy of Hulk Hogan more so, but, you know, that's a whole other issue. But yeah, I mean, it's basically a 7-year storyline that they tell, like his whole, up until just after WrestleMania 8, when, you know, she leaves, and they did put in the magazine, I remember, like Rob was saying, that they did get divorced and, you know, give them their privacy at this time, that it was very, very all-encompassing for both of them.
Yes, indeed. And it also made John Keselika's list. He said that it's basically the couple that John grew up with. And, you know, the whole storyline of, like, you know, Macho Man and Liz, you know, Macho Man would always hold the ropes for Liz. And the WrestleMania 8 match and angle between Ric Flair and, you know, the WrestleMania 7 reuniting of the two. So, like John also said, you know, it was just a match made in heaven for the WWE. Rob, do you have any honorable mentions that you want to give? If you have any that, you know, any couples that, you know, you remember that you really liked?
No, I didn't put that much thought into it.
Alrighty. Ryan, do you have any honorable mentions that you want to give? You know, like the couples that you liked in pro wrestling?
Not too much. I'm trying to think if there was any. No, I do want to say, though, I originally hit Triple H and Stephanie, or Triple H in China, but then when I saw it was on Rob's list, I changed it to Stephanie. Just one more time, Stephanie won out over China, I guess.
Alrighty, well, that's going to do it for our couples of pro wrestling. But when we come back, we are going to do the betrayals and breakups of pro wrestling. So stay with us right here on Making Mount Rushmore Valentine's Day.
So, is this on? Yo, Jimmy, hit me with that Triple H. Yeah, you let the music keep playing, Mr. Thunder. Y'all tell me who the top it is now.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to Making Mount Rushmore Best Couples and Best Betrayals. I'm your host James Gruenberg, along with Ryan Everett, Rob Kindler, and not with us tonight, but he has his list, John Keselika. So now, gentlemen, we are going to do our best betrayals in pro wrestling. Rob, give us one on your list, best betrayals.
Well, to piggyback off the last one and off of John's list, I have Macho Man and Sherry for best betrayal. Well, again, she was all up in his matches. They were a great couple. They were together for a couple years. He even made her queen. And then he lost his career. He lost that match to the Warrior. And she turned her back on him. She kicked him while he was down. Basically just said, okay, now what? You can't do anything for me, so I'm done with you. You're gone. She ran off and joined the Million Dollar Man. But again, that led up to the reunite of Macho Man and Elizabeth. And so I think he turned out pretty good in the end.
Yes, indeed. Well, that also made John Keselika's list. To quote Gorilla Monsoon, she lost her meal ticket. And suddenly Sherry was using all of her kicks and slaps she had utilized in the baby faces. And now she's, kicking and hitting on Macho Man, beating him up. And, you know, what made it better was that the reuniting of Miss Elizabeth and Macho Man Randy Savage. Ryan, it did not make your list, but do you have anything that you want to add to the Macho Man and Sherry breaking up?
That's my favorite match of all time, WrestleMania 7. So I have no problem with it being on there. I mean, in a way, though, I think Sherry was justified. You know, her man lost and he was done. She's a manager. She can't be hanging out with this deadweight Randy Savage anymore. So she's kind of justified, I think, in her actions.
Yes, indeed. And, you don't want to lose her. You can't manage a loser. And, you know, Macho Man lost. So. You know, good riddance and, have a nice life. And Sherry would end up, managing another winner in Shawn Michaels for a little while. Ryan, give us one off of your list of betrayals.
I'll go with The Undertaker and Paul Bearer at SummerSlam 96. And this was one where it was definitely, I think the characters had run their course, but it really helped to freshen both them up and give a new dimension to Mankind, who has just come in, and they had the Boiler Room Brawl, and they, killed each other for a half hour, and then the Undertaker goes to Paul Bearer, and Paul Bearer turns his back on him, and then hits him with the urn. And I'll never forget, right after this, it was on the cover of the WWF magazine, and they had I don't know if it was a time-lapse photo or whatever, but it showed blow by blow him hitting him with the urn, and it was really a good photo and just kind of captured the betrayal of Paul Bearer.
I never would have thought that The Undertaker and Paul Bearer were going to split. I never thought that Paul Bearer would turn his back on The Undertaker. And he did, and then he brings in Kane, and then, Undertaker and Paul Bearer sort of reunite under the Ministry of Darkness. So, and when Paul Bearer, said, oh, you have a brother, and your brother's alive, and the whole Kane coming in, that was just some crazy stuff. And when Kane set the casket on fire and Paul Bearer just watched the Undertaker burn in the casket. Rob, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to add to Paul Bearer betraying the Undertaker?
Initially it was quite a shock. I mean, they'd been together since 91, a good 5 years. Paul Bearer got him from Brother Love. But towards the end of it, when it was just I got annoyed with it, how many times they would break up and how many times they'd get back together, and you just never had that same chemistry after the first one.
No, they didn't. And, you know, I don't know if you guys remember when The Undertaker buried Paul Bearer in the cement mixer at the Great American Bash 2004. That was weird, and that was crazy. So, you know,
I'm not gonna remember.
Yeah, wasn't the best times. I'm gonna read one off of John's list. He has the Sandman and Lori Fullington. He said 1996 wasn't the best year for Sandman's family life. Raven convinced the Sandman's wife at the time, Lori, to leave the Sandman and join the flock. And he said the breakup is worse when Raven got Sandman's son Tyler to be in Raven's corner as well. And Tyler goes, Daddy, you're drunk. I worship Raven now. And, you know, the Sandman just breaking down. So, you know, the Sandman's family turns on the Sandman himself in ECW. And I remember, like, hearing that. And it was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, Raven just took the Sandman's wife and his kid. And now they're part of, like, Raven's crew. Like, this is crazy. Ryan, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to add to the Sandman and Lori?
Not too much. I kind of have been watching along with ECW with the ECW three-way podcast on North-South Connection, and they're just getting to this part now, and it's the first time I've ever really seen it in full. I like heard about it and seen, like, you know, the bigger events, but watching it week to week, it is really something. Yeah, it's a great angle.
Yep. Rob, do you have anything to add to the Sandman and the Sandman's family leaving the Sandman?
Not really. I'm out here in Reno, and we didn't get ECW television. So the most I was able to do was kind of sort of semi-follow it with PWI. But even then, it wasn't the best. But, yeah, the only thing I remember is, like you said, I worship Raven now and Sandman breaking down.
Yeah. Rob, give us another one off of your list.
You know, a guilty pleasure of mine was Dusty Rhodes and Sapphire. I remember, like I said earlier, SummerSlam 1990 was my first pay-per-view that I actually remember seeing. And they were supposed to have a match between Sapphire and Sherry, but Sapphire didn't come out, so Sherry got won by a forfeit. And nobody could find her anywhere. I'm sure Hacksaw's still looking for her. But I remember her walking in quickly into a dressing room and just locking herself in there. And Dusty's trying to get her out. And he's like, well, I got to go to my match, but maybe I got to go. And so he leaves without her. And all of a sudden, Ted DiBiase comes up on the intercom, well, over the microphone, excuse me, saying, you know, today I bought Sapphire. My money can buy anything. And I remember Piper talking about how he was the mysterious gift she was getting throughout that time too. You know, a trip around the world, a diamond necklace, a mink fur coat. And I liked the fact that he had no beef with Dusty Rhodes before, had no reason to do that. He just did it to be a dick. And she did it. She went with it, basically saying, okay, money's more valuable than the American dream. And then him breaking down and trying to get up that aisle to him, and Macho Man taking advantage of that. And then right at the end, when they get in the limo and he's running, they drive off and he just misses them.
Yeah, Yeah, I can't believe that, you know, Sapphire went with the Million Dollar Man. Ryan, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to add to Sapphire betraying Dusty Rhodes?
I think I might have left it off my list because it's just too heartbreaking, you know. Such a lovely couple that, you know, all Dusty wanted to do was come out to the ring and dance with this overweight elderly woman, and it was quite the pairing. And yeah, I also like the fact that Ted DiBiase had no previous interactions with Dusty Rhodes. He just wanted to be a dick, and he was.
Yep. Ryan, give us another one off of your list.
So another one I had was Trish Stratus and Chris Jericho from, this was at WrestleMania 20. And this was, you know, a long storyline that they were playing out in December. I think they had Christian and Jericho were trying to go out with Lita and Trish. And then they did, but then the ladies found out it was a setup. Like, they were trying to see who could get the other one first. And then they had the intergender match, but then it turned out that Chris Jericho really did like Trish, and they just kept building and building. And then finally at WrestleMania, Jericho and Christian are having the match, and then Trish comes out, and at first it looks like she accidentally hits Jericho, but then she reveals that she's with Christian. And I think everyone could agree that evil Trish is much hotter than regular Trish. And it really gave Trish's character some new life from a new angle.
I remember watching WrestleMania 20, and I was in shock when Trish Stratus turned on Chris Jericho, because it won Jericho to win the match, and he loses. And then the low blow by Trish, and then Christian just making out with Christian. And I was just like, oh, why, Trish, why? Rob, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to add to Trish Stratus turning on Chris Jericho?
The only thing I really remember from that off the top of my head was that Marmy Dick move where they actually bet one Canadian loony, which is basically $1, on who could get the other one first.
Yeah. Christian goes, I have $1 Canadian that says you're on. I'm going to read another one from John's list. He has Bad News Brown. And he said that, you know, he turned on two Survivor Series teams, but his best was turning on Bret Hart after WrestleMania 4 Battle Royal. And he said it was a simple betrayal. But he said that, you know, Bad News Brown's betrayal of Bret Hart, you know, helped put Bret Hart on the singles push. And, you know, it built the program for them through the spring and summer. And he said that, you know, his friends still quote from Gorilla and Bob Uecker, a double cross by Bad News, a real Pearl Harbor job. And, you know, I thought these guys were really friends. So, you know, Bad News Brown turning on Bret Hart at WrestleMania 4. Ryan, do you have anything to say about Bad News Brown and him turning on Bret Hart at WrestleMania 4, or anything that is Bad News Brown related to betrayals?
Well, as far as the WrestleMania 4 goes, I mean, Bret should know it's Battle Royal. It's every man for himself. So really, you got to say that Bret Hart screwed Bret Hart there. He wasn't aware of what was going on.
Yes, and Rob, do you have anything to add about Bad News Brown?
No, I just agree with him, with Ryan, totally. Again, you can't have two winners. It's got to come down to one. So why was he surprised that bad news turned on him? And yeah, I remember him turning on his Survivor Series teams when I rent those as a child. And I'm thinking, well, he turned on two of them. Why would anybody want this guy on their team?
Including, it was Honky Tonk Man both times. Like, he should have, when they were putting together the team the second year, he should have been like, now, wait a second, maybe we should try and look for someone else.
Yeah, so, you know, can't trust Bad News Brown, can you? No, I guess not. Rob, give us another one off of your list.
I got Brett and Owen myself. I love how, again, Owen turned on the family at Survivor Series, kind of. Basically, he's just kind of like, you know, what are you doing? You know how to do this. Why are you screwing me up? And then everyone else wins and they're all celebrating. But did they invite Owen out to celebrate with him? Nope, they couldn't be bothered. So he took it upon himself to come out and basically like, hey, what's going on? Why not me? And then I loved how they made up with it just in time for Christmas. And then at Royal Rumble 94, Brett selfishly refused to tag Owen. Owen was there. He had his hand out. But Brett decided to hog the spotlight himself and put on the sharpshooter. And referee ruled that Brett couldn't continue. And so Owen was pissed and kicked his leg out from under his leg, which led to a series of great matches. The Survivor Series cage match, the WrestleMania 10 opener. I mean, that was arguably the best match of the card. I mean, I can just go on and on about what great stuff these guys did. And
yeah, you know, Owen's betrayal of Bret Hart and the whole, the split between the brothers, that gave us a lot of classic matches. And, that WrestleMania 10 match and then the SummerSlam 94 match, you know, the cage with WWF title on the line. It's just, it was incredible brother versus brother, you know, and like with Owen beating Bret at WrestleMania 10 and then Owen winning King of the Ring, you know, after his brother did in 93, everything just seemed to be going like Owen's way. And then, you know, they eventually reunite after like Bret Hart gets the family back together in like 1997. And that reforms like the Hart Foundation. So, you know, evil Owen, you know, we get evil Owen, but it was great. Ryan, it did not make your list, but do you have anything you want to say about Owen turning on Bret?
No, it's a great feud, and it's one of those things where, like, if you look at it in a certain way, and I think this is the best way to do heel turns, if you look at it in a certain way, like, everything Owen says is true. Like, you know, he was overshadowed by Bret. He tries to get him, make him be a tag team, and then all he had to do was tag, but he's too damn selfish, and that's why he got his leg kicked out of his leg, you know? I mean, Owen was ready to win the tag titles, and Bret wouldn't let him.
Yep. I'm going to close out John Keselika's list here, and he has as his final pick is the Rockers split. With, Shawn Michaels basically throwing Marty Jannetty through the barbershop window. You know, the Rockers were on a losing streak. And, Shawn Michaels said that it was all Marty's fault. And that, you know, Shawn Michaels threw Marty through the window. So the Rockers split is one of John's picks for best betrayals. Ryan, it made your honorable mention list. What do you want to say about the Rockers split?
Yeah, I mean, this was one of the first like big angles I remember as a fan. I was six, I guess, when this happened, and it was like one of the first things I remember watching on a Saturday morning show that was like a huge event that happened. And it was just, it had been built really well for like I think even October through January, like they always hit, they kept having these mishaps in the ring where, you know, they'd accidentally hit the other one or just mix ups that they, you weren't used to seeing between them since they were such a good team. And yeah, it was a great thing. And then, you know, as Bobby Heenan put it, he jumped through the window to get away from Shawn Michaels. It was a great, it's one of the most classic moments, I think, like, especially from that era.
Yeah. Rob, it did not make your list, but do you have anything that you want to say about the Rockers split and Shawn Michaels turning on Marty Jannetty?
See, I think I was about 11 years old when this happened. And I remember he's like, at that Survivor Series, Shawn got eliminated because of miscommunication with Marty. And again, Shawn got upset, and but they calmed down. And I remember the magazine talking about, are the Rockers going to split up? And one thing I remember more than anything is Bobby Heenan talking about how Marty Jannetty was so scared of Shawn Michaels that he jumped through the window, and Shawn was innocent. In fact, it's kind of cool. I was a member of Pro Wrestling Loot, and one of the blind boxes I got had a shirt of Marty and Shawn in the window, with Marty just kind of hanging there and bent over.
Where did you put those movies that you said
about? Yeah, it was a really, really big betrayal, you know, the Rockers, splitting. Ryan, give us another one off your list, if you will.
All right, so I'll go kind of the same time frame, a little bit earlier, but Jake Roberts turning on the Ultimate Warrior, and kind of alluded to it earlier with Jake Roberts and Damian as a relationship, and how the death of Damian, I think, made Jake have like a psychotic break, and he decided to, you know, maybe he had to confront death in his own right, and ended up making an alliance with the Undertaker to attack the Ultimate Warrior. And the, you know, they had these crazy vignettes where the Jake would bury the Ultimate Warrior up to his neck in dirt, and, you know, the Warrior would just keep yelling at him to do more, Snake Man. And then eventually Jake locked him in a room with a cobra, and then they were set up for a huge feud. And then shocker of shocker, the Ultimate Warrior had problems backstage, and it ended up not culminating, but the build up to it was really good.
Yeah. I remember it was didn't the snake also bite Ultimate Warrior too, with the whole casket, right?
Yeah, it jumps out of like a casket that he opens, and then it revealed that the room is full of snakes, and including this cobra.
Yeah, it did not make Rob, it didn't make your list. It didn't make Rob's list, but it was a very Rob, it didn't make your list, but do you have anything that you want to add to Jake Roberts turning on Ultimate Warrior?
You know, again, that was a very memorable angle with him trying to teach him the dark side and how through him is the only way Warrior could beat the Undertaker. And it seemed legitimate right up until the point that he turned on him and joined up with Undertaker. And one of the things that agitated me is SummerSlam 91. I mean, why would they have Ultimate Warrior and Macho Man against Hogan against Sergeant Slaughter and them? They were done. They could have been ended at WrestleMania, and they could have done something there with them. Maybe Macho Man, Hogan and Warrior against those two. Or if you really wanted to have Hogan and Slaughter, do them in a boot camp match and have Warrior versus Jake or Warrior versus Undertaker. I think they really dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, then with Ultimate Warrior, you know, getting fired, doesn't really help, didn't really help Jake's career either. Rob, close us out with
Macho Man and Jake, though.
Yeah. Rob, close us out with your list, if you will.
The biggest betrayal I could think of was Hulk Hogan on WCW. When he came out there at Bash at the Beach, seemingly to help out Luger and Savage. No, he drops the leg on Savage and forms the NWO and just basically revitalizes his whole career. Just a big breath of fresh air. Something totally new. And one of the things I've learned about that from Eric Bischoff's podcast was they actually had Sting as a backup to turn on him and join the NWO if Hogan wouldn't.
Yes, indeed. It was a new world order for Hogan. And, you know, Hulk Hogan has betrayed WCW. That is the line from Bobby the Brain Heenan. And I think, you know, it was either Dusty or Tony that said, Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. And, you know, the whole, just the formation of the NWO, fans were just throwing trash in the ring over Hogan dropping the Macho Man with the leg drop and betraying WCW. So Hulk Hogan going bad guy, you know, it revitalized his career and made Hulk Hogan cool when it seemed like it was going stale for him. Ryan, it did not make your list, but do you have anything to say about Hogan turning on WCW and forming the NWO?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously changed wrestling, and there's no one else. You know, they could have hit, I know they had Sting as a possibility, and, you know, there's the infamous Meltzer article where he said, like, it could be Tatanka or Mabel. But really, I mean, there's no one other than, there's no way that the NWO gets as big as it does without Hulk Hogan. You hear so many people that were like, yeah, I was a fan in the 80s, and then I kind of dropped out, and then I saw Hulk Hogan was a bad guy, so I had to come back on, and that's like, it brought so many people because it was something different at the time, and it was so unusual to see Hulk Hogan as a heel against this, you know, leading this renegade group.
Yeah, indeed. If it wasn't for Hogan, there is no NWO. Ryan, close us out with your last pick.
All right. My last one is actually The Rock versus The People at the 1998 Survivor Series. I thought it was just a great way to, like, one of the best shock heel turns that, you know, it kind of became too much of a cliche in the Attitude Era, but this was the one time it was pulled off basically to perfection where, you know, The Rock never really turned face after SummerSlam 98. It was just sort of like he was fighting against, you know, he found himself involved with The Undertaker and Kane when they were heels against Austin. And then it just kind of naturally led to more chairs for him, and then Vince McMahon started taking his anger out on The Rock because The Rock was with The People and Vince McMahon hated The People. And then they go through the whole tournament, and it's something that when it was happening you didn't notice it, but when you look back now, every match The Rock wins in the tournament is like a screwy fashion, or he's helped by the big boss man or Vince McMahon in a way that you don't even really think about until the end, where they, the first time they do a Montreal Redux, and the one time it actually works, I think, to great success. And it's just And then the next night, you know, The Rock cut the promo about how, you know, he never asked for the people's help. He doesn't want the people's help. And, you know, screw the people. They never liked him. And he's the corporate champ now. And that was just perfection. And it led, you know, perfectly to all the way up to WrestleMania with him and Austin having the feud.
Yeah, the Rock, you know, joining Vince McMahon's corporation and being the stable of the corporation was a really good heel move. And, you know, the Rock hating the people and, you know, the Rock and Mankind going at it through all those battles. And, you know, just the Rock, you know, hating the people and, you know, fans booing him. Now, they didn't really cheer for The Rock in 1998, you know, like they liked him. But then, you know, that was like the best thing The Rock did was like join Vince McMahon and Shane and the corporation. Rob, it did not make your list, but do you have anything that you want to add to The Rock turning on the people?
See, I remember him being, you know, pretty hot back in between SummerSlam and Survivor Series. Everybody seemed to be loving him and cheering on him. And then all of a sudden, boom, out of nowhere, he turns on him, joins McMahon's corporation. And I was just thinking, didn't he just turn face? Of course, then again, you know, it was a Russo era. So what can you say? It was a swerve, bro. And like you said, I loved those Survivor Series matches, you know, a 3-second match with Boss Man. That match with Shamrock, where Boss Man tried to throw Shamrock the nightstick, and The Rock does that sick one-hand catch. And then that match with him and Undertaker, where Kane came out and chokeslammed The Rock.
Yeah,
because he wanted Undertaker to get disqualified, which I thought was clever. And then finally, you know, with Mick Foley thinking for there was like a father-son relationship between him and Vince, to Vince turning on him, to The Rock just basically just as he said, this title means more to me than any of you guys.
Yeah, indeed. Can you smell what The Rock is cooking? You know, and I'll just always think that, like, you know, him at the Royal Rumble 1999 is the best when he's just like, say you quit, you know, to Mankind. But if I had to give one betrayal that I think, like, you know, people really miss, but it's one that I really enjoy, I would say it's Lita turning on Matt Hardy, because, you know, in 2005, Lita goes from, it starts in 2004, really, when Lita goes with Kane, and then she turns on Kane to Edge. And then all of a sudden, I see on WWE.com, Matt Hardy gets released. And then watching on Monday Night Raw, apparently somebody attacks Edge from behind backstage. And I thought, oh, is that Matt Hardy? Like, you know, is he back? Like, did they rehire him? Like, is he supposed to be there? And he's just getting taken out by security each time. And then they did the wedding, but then Matt Hardy comes out again. And then Matt Hardy gets reinstated into WWE. They have that feud with Edge. And, you know, it ends with the loser leaves Raw ladder match where Edge's briefcase is on the line. I did not know that was real and that Matt Hardy looked at Lita's text messages and saw Adam Copeland, and he forced Lita to tell the truth that she really did. Amy Dumas, who is Lita, cheated on Matt Hardy with Adam Copeland, who is known as Edge. Ryan, do you have anything to add to that one?
No, that was a crazy one, and it was interesting how, you know, at first they fired Matt Hardy because of it, because he got cheated on, I guess. Well, I think the real reason they gave was that he, like, was talking about it in public. But, yeah, it was crazy that then they you know, Matt Hardy came back a few months later, and then they decided to make it into a storyline and stuff. And it was, yeah, it was a really good feud, and it was one of those things that really helped push Edge, like, over the top, I think.
Yeah, and, like, I just, like, you know, again, it's one of those, like, you know, real feelings and real personal things are getting into the storyline, because I did not know that was real until, like, a little bit later that, oh, that actually did happen. Like, that's not just a storyline, you know? And that they were really dating in real life for a little while. Well, that's going to do it for betrayals and making Mount Rushmore best couples and best betrayals. But before we go, Ryan, do you have anything that you want to plug for the place to be?
Yeah, sure. And once a month, me and my wife, Cindy, do With This Ring. And we started as she had, like, never really watched wrestling before. And we started watching it was when the GWWE match poll was out, and we watched matches on there and kind of talked over them. And then we continued with the GWCW one. And then, so now we've continued with the wrestler polls. So the last one we just did was Ric Flair, and that ended our WCW list. And now we're starting to look at guys for the new GWWE poll that comes out. And it comes out usually towards the end of the month on Place to Be.
Alrighty, yes. Rob, do you have anything that you want to plug for the Place to Be?
Just next week, I'm going to be doing another Making Mount Rushmore with John. Forgive me, don't want to butcher his last name. And Steve Riddle. And we're going to be discussing the greatest love songs and the greatest breakup songs.
Oh, yes, that is the sister Mount Rushmore to the wrestling Mount Rushmore, or vice versa. I think that Mount Rushmore series came out before the wrestling edition did, you know. So, yeah, that should be a fun one. As for myself, you can find me on the Place to Be Wrestling feed. I host Extreme Resurrection with Michael Cook, where we take a look back at ECW on the Sci-Fi Network in 2006 through 2010. We are heading towards ECW's disastrous pay-per-view in 2006, December to Dismember, with that Extreme Elimination Chamber match. And we just got done recording the episode where Bobby Lashley actually makes his debut for ECW. You can find me on the North South Connection feed. I am a guest on WCW Must Die with Johnny C. We are going to be covering WCW Slamboree 2000. As you all know, the main event of that was Jeff Jarrett versus DDP versus David Arquette for the World Heavyweight title in the Triple Cage match. Well, that's going to do it for us on Making Mount Rushmore Wrestling Edition. I'm James Grunberg alongside Ryan Everett and Rob Kindler, along with John Keselika. And we will see you next time on Making Mount Rushmore. Thank you.